Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. And it is my privilege to introduce to you the lady that has been my sponsor for almost 9 years, and I've known her for almost 11, and it's been an honor and a privilege to work with her. I admire her zest for life. She's funky. She's rambunctious. And she loves me enough to call me on my crap. Welcome, Wayne D.
I'm Ryan and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome the newcomers and all the ones that took chips tonight. Congratulations. Thank you, Bill, for asking me to speak. It really is a privilege to be able to do this, and this is going to make a lot of noise. My sobriety date is June 6, 1994. My home group is the Tuesday Night Women's Facebook group, and I'm nervous. And all my sponsors are, you're not nervous. Oh, yes, I am. Once I get going, though, I'll be okay. You know, sobriety has been the best thing that I've ever done. It's given me, this program has given me a new life. It gave me a life. Because I was headed down a really bad road. You know, it's by the grace of God that I'm here. I started drinking, I was born and raised in Fresno, and started drinking at a really young age, about 12, 13. It was that summer, and I know it was that summer, because right before that, a good friend of mine said, that's the summer you change. And I did. I had two older brothers, and they were already in drugs and drinking, and I thought they were really cool. I grew up just as a baby. I'm the only girl of three, and I was daddy's little girl. I always felt different, though. In our house, my dad was an alcoholic, still is, and he was the type of alcoholic that was a binge drinker, and he'd go out of town, and I didn't understand why he was going out of town, but my mom would throw his clothes outside when he got back, and I would be the one to go clean it up, because if mom was happy, everybody would be happy. And I didn't understand what an alcoholic was. I was told that he was allergic to alcohol. And I thought that was like, you know, people who eat shellfish or strawberries and they break out and hide. That's what I thought. No, he ends up in jail. And so it wasn't until I was older that I really knew what an alcoholic was. In fact, I had to change it because I always thought it was the drunk down in G Street in Fresno. But I always felt different. You know, I never fit in, and I don't, you know, it's just the way, I have a good household. I mean, on the outside, we were that picture-perfect family. In fact, all my friends always hung out, my brother's friends, they always hung out at our house, because my parents were the cool parents. We didn't drink in the house, but they were the ones that they could always talk to, and everybody thought we were just like, you know, the great family, but yet all of us were dying inside of some addiction. And that relationship that my close friends had with my parents, I didn't have, especially the one with my mom. And I used to get really jealous. Yeah, it was kind of cool that, you know, my friends could come over. Although it was really nice when we'd come home and we were all drunk and they'd throw up and get the attention. I'd do the worst, but I'd just lay in bed and, you know, the bed spins. And, but I was jealous of that relationship. And, you know, just feeling different. And when I drank alcohol that very first time, opened up a whole new world. It took all that pain away, being, you know, too short and too cute. I hate that word, you're cute. All that crap of not being good enough, not measuring up, all went away, and I could be whoever I wanted, you know, do whatever I want. In fact, when I was drinking, I was about 5'10", big boobs, blonde, you know, really smart, instead of 5 foot and frumpy. But, you know, alcohol was, you know, it was fun. It was a lot of fun at first. I don't want to talk too much, you know, get into too much of a drunk log, but I always drank different from my friends from the get-go. I always drank more and faster. faster, because when you put alcohol in me, I can't stop. I want more, I want more, I want more, and I pass out and black out. I used to call passing out, I fell asleep. I mean, I didn't call it passing out until I got sober, because I fell asleep. But I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. When we were young, it wasn't really hard to get alcohol. And we'd either, you know, older brother and sisters, or we'd pimp it at liquor store, the 7-Eleven, pay the guy, you know, buy him a bottle, you know, big old gallon of wine, and we'd get, you know, beer. And my girlfriends would get a 12-pack, and it'd be like 4 or 5 of us, and I had to have my own. And that was during high school because I was afraid I'd run out. And usually I would drink mine in there. I could drink a lot for a little person because I couldn't stop. It wasn't really a problem in high school. Well, I shouldn't say that. I just didn't get in trouble in high school. It was a Friday, Saturday night drinking, after football games, and then like a senior year in high school, I had this thing about not drinking on Sunday. I went to Catholic school for 12 years, and something about Sunday that I didn't think Catholics drank on Sunday. I thought that was the day you were supposed to go to church and repent or something. I missed the boat there. And so I wouldn't drink on Sunday. Well, that ended about my senior year in high school. I was a pep girl, and Brother Warren was our coach, and he was a drunk. So we drank, and he could never smell it on us. We always kind of stayed away from everybody else. But that's how I grew up. I didn't get in trouble. My brothers were always, they're the ones that walked in the house hitting the walls. And so I didn't get caught at anything. I went to Crescent State, and let me back up a little bit. In high school, it's kind of funny. A lot of my friends couldn't believe that I was an alcoholic. They knew I drank a lot, but I was always that fun drunk. I wasn't the crier or the fighter, unless I saw my best friend get beaten up, and then I jumped in. But I wasn't, I didn't pick fights. I wasn't, I just wasn't one of those girls. And I drank a lot more. It was fun. And when I went to school, my dad kind of bribed me. I was going to go away, and he bribed me and said, "Hey, if you stay in Fresno, I'll get you this, this, and this." And I said, "Okay." Because that's how it was in my house. In fact, I was the people pleaser. I did everything to get the approval of my parents. I did not want to rock the boat. I was, the perfect child. Well, I wasn't the perfect child, but, I did everything I could to get my dad's attention. Now, alcoholism, you hear a lot of people talk about the disease of perception. My perception was so different than my brother's. And today, I let them see what they want to see or how they saw it, because I see something different, and it's both okay. I saw them as getting all the attention, especially from my dad. And, he'd do this with them and do that. And, when it was my turn, he didn't show up for this, or because he was golfing, or he was doing something like that. So I wasn't important. And that's all I ever wanted to be, was important to somebody. And, but I had the mom that was, "I love you all the time." She's a great mom, but I fought with her. It was terrible. And, I'm really, really grateful that my relationship with my daughter is nothing, nothing like it was with my mom. I was talking to someone the other day, and this was what I did when I wasn't drunk. I got so mad at my mom. We were in downtown Fresno. I was just yelling at her, and I'm driving. I kicked her out of the car in downtown Fresno and told her to call my dad, and I took off in her car. Now, that's the kind of crap I did sober, I was all about me, and I fought with her the most because, she was the reason why my dad drank, or why his clothes would end up outside. That's not how it was, but that's how I saw it. And my mom and I just fight. She wanted me to be this perfect girl, and I wasn't, and I could never measure up to it. I tried, but I could never measure up. I went to Fresno State, and I said, "Okay, I'm going to join a sorority, because now I'm going to, join this house. There's 40 women, and they're going to like me." Okay. Well, I had a lot of friends, but I didn't feel like, now we call it connected. I always just felt different. I'd rather drink with the guys than do whatever they're doing. But there were a few of us that did that. And so I joined a sorority, and it didn't take long. not even 6 months that, you know, once again, I felt like I was different, that I didn't belong, that, you know, this is not for me, but I stuck around anyway. And, you know, we'd be in a circle having a meeting, and I would feel like I was outside of the circle. Even though I was sitting there, I felt like I was outside, like an outsider. And that just used to tear me up, and I didn't know what to do about it except drink. And I couldn't just drink one or two, you know. I got through college. I did just fine, too. I graduated. I have some memories of college. Actually, I have a lot. But I was a blackout drinker, and that wasn't always the best. And my friends, I'd have to kind of like, you know, try to find out what I did or what I said. You know, sometimes they just laugh at me, and I thought, okay, everything's okay. And then sometimes you wouldn't believe what you did last night. Oh, yeah, I remember. Clueless. Sometimes I can remember starting out at a party and then ending up in San Luis or down in L.A. There were a couple of times. I can remember, like, saying I'm going to go, and then it's nothing until I'm like waking up going, what the hell am I? You know, I was really, you know, lucky too. A lot of my brother's friends were in the fraternities and were my friends, and they take care of me. They take me home. I used to get really, really mad because my brother wouldn't let me date any of his friends. It was like, maybe they just didn't want to date me. I don't know. They weren't allowed to, and it used to make me really mad. Today, I'm so glad I didn't date any of them. God always has a plan. In college, I promised Alyssa I would tell this story. In high school, we used to have parties. I won a bet that I wouldn't drink for 30 days, and it was up in a religion class. The tally mark. So anyways, I won, and I got to get case beer. And, right? Catholic girls, we're good. And so we're at my girlfriend's house, her parents aren't there, and so I thought it would be really funny, and I took one of the 12-pack, the Coors Light, you know, the 12-pack box. I put it on my head and took all my clothes off, and the pizza guy was coming. So I ran out and I opened, like, I opened the door, and I'm standing like this, and the guy just looked at me. He didn't laugh. He didn't go, oh! You know, I was just horrified. So I ran off. I mean, that's the kind of stupid stuff I did. I did some other streaking down the road when I first, the first time I drank, I blacked out, I passed out, and I went streaking. So they said. I also have been known to dance on tables. I remember a couple times I danced with my clothes on. You know, I didn't take my clothes off like in public. Well, I don't know. But for the most part, I can remember keeping them on. I was a pretty good girl. Pretty good girl. And then, anyway, let's just go flat. Okay, but in college, I was the type, I still am, if you dare me to do something, I'm going to do it. Or if you say I can't do it, don't ever tell me you can't do that because I'll do it. I am woman, hear me roar. You know? And so this fraternity was having a fundraiser, and it's how many shots of beer you can drink in an hour. I said, yeah, sign me up, I'll do that one. And, you know, I was going around to, like, you know, some of the guys in the fraternity said, okay, you know, will you sponsor me, you know, dime, quarter, will you guys sponsor me a dollar? And I said, yeah, how many think you can drink? Oh, I don't know, probably about 20. And they go, okay, so, should have known. I was the first one there that night, and it was in a, you know, like a square, and the cake was on the other side of the square table, and they had pitchers of beer, and they were pouring it into, like, you know, the little shot glass. And so they go, and I started drinking. Like, after 10, they moved the cake over to my side, and I ended up drinking 121 shots in an hour. My name was on a plaque. It's not there. It's not there anymore because I checked. Not too long ago. My name was on a plaque for that. I was so embarrassed that I had like a 2-day hangover, and I wouldn't go back and collect that money. And that was embarrassing. But, you know, I look back now, and I could have died. In fact, they changed the rules because I got up, and a friend of mine who's actually a brother-in-law now stuck his finger down my throat so I could throw up and went and drank more. I mean, people die like that today. And, I mean, I just, you know, stupid things like that. If people say, you know, there's a bottle of vodka there, and they say, I just can't take a shot of that. No, I'll just drink the bottle, watch. I mean, stupid, stupid things to get the attention, to just get out, just check out. I love being drunk. And then it came to a point where it wasn't fun anymore. It was, I didn't get any trouble. I didn't get thrown in jail. I got pulled over one night. It was the 4th of July, and I had been drinking, and the friend I was with, my brother's friend, already had 2 DUIs, so he thought I should drive. And we drove, 2 blocks to Willikers in Fresno, and I got pulled over in their parking lot. And all of a sudden, I can remember just, snapping out of it. And I was drunk, because we'd been drinking all day. And the guy, was asking me questions, and I had a necklace on. And he says, well, can you recite the alphabet? And so I started going, alpha, beta, gamma. I was doing the Greek alphabet. And I don't know. I go, oops, And he starts kind of chuckling. And he kind of says, I'm going to let you go. And so he goes, why don't you go inside and drink a cup of coffee? I think you just need to sober up a little bit more. Well, first of all, I was 20. I wasn't even allowed to get in there, but I did. I had a fake ID since I was 17 or 18. And then, do you think I went in there and drank coffee? No. Line up the shots. Let's drink. I'll show him, And I ended up driving home, too, that night because he didn't want another DUI. I didn't care, really. I just didn't think of the consequences. And then, one thing that's kind of significant is I graduated from I graduated from college, and I was going to law school, and because I was told all my life that I would be a good lawyer, that I'm kind of deceiving. I don't know. I thought it was more of a bullshitter, but and from a very young age, that's what I was going to do. You'll be a lawyer. You need to go to law school, and so I did. But deep down, I knew I did not want to do it. It sounded good. I wanted to make money, and no man's going to take care of me. I hated it, and I went to law school. I lasted a month. Well, not even a month, really. But it made me sick. I would go to class, and then they drilled you, and I just couldn't do it. I knew I didn't want to do it. And so at the same time, my brother, my oldest brother, was in dental school in Wisconsin, and my parents were with him getting his apartment ready and all that kind of stuff. And one more time, he's more important than me. Here I am just going, up to Sacramento, but he's going to dental school. It's more important. That's how I thought. And so about 3 weeks into it, I called over there, before cell phones, and I said, I can't do this. I want to leave law school. And all I heard, my dad said he didn't say this, but what I heard was, you're a loser, you're a quitter, we don't quit in my family, because that's how I was raised. You don't quit. You start a sport, you finish it to the end. Anything that you do, so I'm thinking, oh God. And you got to remember, all I ever wanted to do was have my parents be proud of me. Especially my dad. I wanted him, to get his approval. And that was the first time I ever really contemplated suicide. I said, I'd rather die than have to face him. And, here I am, my older brother was actually getting his act together. My middle brother, that was a whole different story. And, but I didn't want to do it. I was scared, and, he handed the phone to my mom while she said, let me have it. I have no idea. And I didn't even say anything to my mom, and she said, nothing is worth taking your life. And I'll never forget those words, and I couldn't say anything else. And that, for me, was God's moment, His grace right there. Because she knew. She knew me well enough. As much as, I fought with that woman and told her I hated her and, all the things that we do, she knew. And next day I went, and it's like I got permission from her. So the next day I went and dropped out of law school. I was sober. But then it's like, oh God, I don't have a backup plan. And I always had a backup plan. I'm very anally organized, still am. But, everything has to, I kind of have control issues. And so everything wasn't falling into plan. And I had nothing to do. So the fair was going on, Cal State Fair, whatever it's called, Cal Expo. And so I did my three most best things, fun things to do in the world. I bet on the ponies, I smoked cigarettes, and I drank beer. And that was probably about noon. And at about 7 o'clock that night, I said, oh crap, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Because for me, it was black and white. There was no gray. And I called the guy I was dating, and I said, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Now I'm crying, I wasn't crying before. Now I'm a sobbing drunk. And he said, well, why don't you come home?
I can't, I'm drunk.
Take the train. I mean, so logical, right? So I took the train, and of course I drank. And long story, the guy told me to become a teacher. I did. As another one of God's moments, I married him. I'm still married to him, and probably one of the greatest blessings that has come to me too. So I come back, get my teaching credential. I'm drinking, and you know, let me back up. My husband was like me at one time, I think. Well, he's not an alcoholic, but he drank like me, because I would have never dated him if he didn't. I remember in college, you know, the all-nighters, that kind of thing, he drank just like me. I mean, I seriously would not have dated him if he didn't drink. Somewhere along the line, we start having kids. He's normal. I'm not. You know, that's another one of God's blessings, to be married to a normie, and that, you know, no matter what, he loves me, and sometimes he doesn't understand the things I do, but in spite of what I do, he still loves me, and that I'm really, really grateful for. Anyway, so I moved to Corcoran. I thought, oh, here we go one more time. I'm moving, and new place. Well, if you've ever been to Corcoran, you know how small it is, okay? It's like hitting a brick wall. But, I had to be pregnant. It didn't take long, I don't know, very short time, that one more time. These people don't really like me. It's because I'm married to him. I got this job because of him. All that kind of stuff. It was nothing about me that, you know, I couldn't have done it on my own. And, you know, I really did. I really believe that people had to be nice to me because of him. And so kind of a joke in Corcoran is that if you don't have a really good marriage, you drink. So I drank those first 5 years. And I was going to divorce that SOB every day. And I treated that man not as bad as I treated my mother, but I never, you know, said a cuss word at him. But, you know, he didn't know when he woke up in the morning to say good morning, you look good, or just stay out of my room. Stay out of the way. I was pretty bad. By this time, I was drinking daily. By the end, I had our first son, and I took a year off from school. Not a good idea. I picked up golf again, and I started golfing 2 days a week, then three, then four, then five. And I was never home, and there was a few times he had to pick me up there. And so that wasn't really good. So I went back to work. We had another child. It was a girl. And I wasn't home. I wasn't being the mom I was supposed to be. I was out drinking. Just my close friends that I grew up with weren't married yet, and they all thought I had found such a wonderful guy. So I was helping them find one. And so I was at Lakeside Bar. You guys know where that is, off of Kansas and towards Hanford and Corcoran? Yeah. You're shaking your head. You know where it is. Just kind of those kind of bars, just helping them find husbands. The real reason is I wanted to drink. I wanted to get out of the house and drink. I felt like I could not raise these kids, you know. Sad to say, I didn't breastfeed because I was afraid, you know, that they would get that alcohol. No, I wanted to drink. That's what it came down to. Drinking, by the end, drinking was more important to me than those kids and that husband. I didn't care anymore. And that's all I did was drink. I was drinking. If I wasn't drinking, I was thinking and planning about drinking. Okay, what babysitter am I going to use this time so this one doesn't think, you know, I'm using her too much, or her parents might think that maybe she's got a drinking problem or something. And one of the babysitters I had, we got into the wine. I'm a beer drinker. I like beer. The Wine of the Month Club. So yeah, we were just, you know, all that. And so we had cases of wine that were the same kind, and we had them out in the refrigerator. And this is one of the things I did towards the end, is I would, when I cooked dinner, I would pour a glass of wine for me, and David would maybe have one the whole night, and then I'd pour another one for dinner, and then I'd clean up. I didn't mind cleaning up, because I drank that bottle, went outside, got another one, and drank it down to where I thought it was, and then threw the other one outside, and I did that a lot. One night, we had a wine tasting party, And you know, I don't know about you, but after the first couple sips, you can't taste any wine. But I was an expert because I took Enology at Fresno State.
Yeah.
We used to ride our bikes and we didn't want to get a DUI, you know, drunk riding. And one night was really bad. Well, the babysitter that got to see me drunk quite a few times, I'm ending up to being her sponsor now. And it's kind of cool because she saw me in those days and she knew where to go. She knew when I got sober too. But let me fast forward. 8 years before I got sober, my dad and brother had gotten sober. My brother went through a rehab in Fresno at St. Agnes. It's no longer there. And then when he got sober, my dad figured he should get sober too. My dad has been trying to get sober since 1960. And doesn't have it. And so anyway, so you go to these, like, there were 30 Thursdays, Bloody Thursdays, and your family was like, and that's where I let my brother have it. Well, he let me have it too. There's nothing wrong with me. But anyways, I heard some things in there, like your role. Anyways, I knew that I had other issues, but alcohol wasn't, because I didn't drink like my dad or my brother. I wasn't that bad yet. And finally, though, I used to sit in meetings with my brother, with my dad in Fresno, and listen. But as soon as I started talking about sobriety, I stopped. But that seed had been planted. I was going to therapy, and I ran out of excuses for about a year. She said, you know, I took that question, are you an alcoholic? No. But everybody in my family knew I had an eating disorder. It was very obvious, and I couldn't lie about that. And so finally, you know, I couldn't go at the beginning of the school year because these kids need me. I couldn't go at Christmas time because my children need me. Of course, I ruined that Christmas. I ran out of excuses June. My last drunk, and I never want to forget this. I did a lot of drinking in the pizza parlor in Corcoran. There's a lot of good places to drink in Corcoran. Pizza parlors. There's four of them. Anyways, I went down there with my son to have two beers, like I did on a Thursday night, which meant two pitchers or more. And I remember there's a, you know, row, two, like, tables of people on both sides, and playing wires, whatever, the dollar. And I remember looking over and seeing my son and the owner making pizza boxes together. He's taking care of. Next thing I knew, I mean, there were still people that I kind of came to, and I was sitting there with the town drunk, the known town drunk. And I was like, oh, crap, this is really bad. But I knew I was going to get help. Even though I was going to an eating disorder hospital, I knew before I went in that I had to come clean with everything. And I don't remember getting home that night, but I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and that was the time when I started getting the DTs. I was shaking. I just wanted to die. I was praying to God, please don't let me wake up. Just let me die in my sleep. Don't let me wake. I can't do this one more day. I cannot do it. And I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew where to go. I just couldn't do it. And so finally, I went to that eating disorders hospital. Went in as anorexic, bulimic, came out the alcoholic. And, you know, alcohol truly was my love. I loved it. And even though I did a lot of other things, and I was doing, when I got out, I was doing, working a couple programs, and it was so hard. And I knew Alcoholics Anonymous worked. I had seen it work in family members and all their friends. So I said, okay, that's what I'm going to stick with for a while. And I'm glad I did, because it really is a great, you know, foundation. You know, if you're new, just don't drink. That's where you have to start. Just don't drink. And then when you don't drink for a couple of days, you know, find someone that you kind of want what they have. That's what I was told. And when I found that person, you know, that my first sponsor, I liked this lady. She, I sounded good in meetings. I mean, just got to remember, I'm like 30 days sober. And she sounded really, everybody sounded really good. Yeah. And so I chose her, and I remember my dad had asked me, so have you talked to your side? I hadn't talked for like a week or two. And my dad goes, have you talked to your sponsor? And I said, no, she hasn't called me. And he goes, and she's not going to, stupid. I go, oh. So my dad suggested, you know, to get me this other sponsor that actually kind of was related to me by family, my mom's side. And that was, you know, truly my first sponsor, Evie. And I had Evie for 17 years. And she was mean, yet kind. She was a step Nazi. It was to the point where all I have to do is say hello, and she knew exactly what I was going to say. It was really scary. She pulled my covers all the time. I needed that when I first got sober. I got away with everything. I didn't pay any consequences. You know, I didn't get in trouble. I didn't lose anything. So, you know, I would have kept doing it if she allowed me to. But somewhere down the line, you know, I got honest with her. I got really honest, and I shared, you know, what was going on. The first thing is I got honest with myself. You know, before I even went in, I realized that I had to come clean with everything. And I did, and because my life was unmanageable. That first step, it was crazy. How could it not be? Because some of the things that I was doing, you know, I make, like, my friends that do drink look at me like, wow, you did that? I mean, even to this day, I thought it was normal. You know, the second and third step, or second step, you know, I was raised Catholic. And went to Catholic school for 12 years. I thought I knew God. You know, I never hated God. I thought he hated me. In fact, up until about the third grade, I was going to become a nun. And then I started getting evil thoughts, and that was awful. But I moved away. I just didn't think, I figured, like, you know, God was going to punish me anyway. He was a punishing God. I never hated him. I was going to hell. So I didn't really think I had a problem with step two. I believed in God. No big deal. The third step, turning it over. Okay, that seems easy. Yeah, right. You know, and I remember my sponsor just saying things to me like, you know, just keep doing it. Keep doing it. Keep saying it. You know, eventually you'll believe it. And it was true. You know, fake it till you make it. But I was so desperate back then, I could not live the way I was living. You know, my babies were 1 and 3 when I got sober. And, you know, when I was going through that time, I couldn't live like this anymore. I wanted them to have a chance. I didn't want them to grow up the way that I grew up. And I saw what sobriety did with, you know, family members and, you know, the friends up in Fresno. So, you know, I did what she said. You know, I used to ask questions at first, why, and I quit doing that because she'd give me some stupid remark like, where I said, well, that's not fair. She says, if you want fair, go to Pastor Robles. I mean, stupid things. And one that my current sponsor says to me, it's none of your business. I like to say, how nice, but they know what that means, so I can't say it to them anymore. You don't know what that means, ask me later. You know, she took me through those steps, you know, the third step we did together, and somewhere down the line, I don't know, oh, I was going to get those steps done in 30 days, because I know I am the overachiever. No, that didn't work. I asked her one time, I said, how do you pray? Because she was Catholic too, and how do you pray? I mean, I know all the rote prayers, but I didn't feel like I was praying. And she taught me, you know, what she did and what spirituality was. And that's what I learned here. That's where my God grew really, really big. Was I learned it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's a difference between religion and spirituality. There's been times in my sobriety that I practice. You know, I'm a practicing Catholic, and there's times when I'm not. But I, you know, the spirituality is completely different. I could deal with that, and it's so freeing compared to what I thought God was. And you know, I still don't understand it, and it keeps growing, and that's okay. I know I was taught, someone told me, and I believe it, that love I feel in my heart, that's God. That's the spiritual part of this program. You know, I did the fourth, and I thought, there are things that I am not telling anybody. Well, I did. But I did leave something out, and I really didn't think it was my fault. Of course not, right? It's all about me. And about 3 years into sobriety, it came up. I started having these flashbacks and these nightmares. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and so I did a four-step on this. There was a boyfriend that I had in ninth grade that was physically and mentally abusive to me. And, you know, it was not my fault. And so I did that. And actually, I did have a part in it, believe it or not. And but I said, you know what? I'll never make amends to this guy when it came to mind. There's no way I couldn't do it. And the opportunity never arose. One time, and one day, it was probably, I don't know, a couple years after that, after I'd gone through, you know, because I was, that was a point. I wasn't going to drink, but I was going to go crazy if I didn't do something about that. So I got through that, and I had done, you know, 7, 8, 9. I'd been making amends. I made amends to my parents. I even, which was scary, I said, I will financially pay you back. Oh my, I'm thinking, do I really want to say this to them? Because I stole out of their, you know, their wallet, their purse. I always had a credit card. I charged like there was no tomorrow. I'm like, oh gosh, you know, do they really want, my dad said, don't worry about it. Not everybody said that though. I was in Fresno at my parents' office, and my kids were with me. They were really little, and that guy walked them through the door with another friend of my dad. And the guy was a family friend, which even made it even more difficult. And my parents, you know, knew what he did. And in fact, one time when I came home with a black eye, my two brothers had to sit on my dad so he wouldn't go kill him. My dad at that time was probably about 380 pounds and he was about 5'5", so I took two of them. But I lied, of course, and said I walked into a wall or whatever. Anyway, I thought, oh crap, there he is, you know, and didn't know what to do. And anyways, long story, I went to my dad's office, called my sponsor, I said, he's here, and she's like, who's there, you know, told her, and she checked me on the phone, all of a sudden, I said, I'm okay, and I walked out, started talking to them, and I apologized to him, I made amends to him, and he made amends to me, and we were kind of standing there joking around, and he said, I wonder what would happen if we were still together today, and I said, I'd be dead, and he goes, yeah, you're right. And it's true. It was not pretty. In fact, that was, you know, it's just kind of the way I went. You know, always trying to catch, you know, if I did this, you know, he'll love me. If I found him, you know, never worked. You know, I made those amends. My mom died almost 3 years ago, and I was out at the cemetery, and I realized what I had done. I completely forgot about this. One time in college, there was a fraternity party, and it's kind of like a funeral, this party. So I went out to the cemetery and stole flowers with a bunch of these people, and I completely forgot about that. And I had been to that cemetery several times after that, and I realized, oh crap, I owe them an amend. So I went in and made amends to them, and, you know, I was willing to monetary anything that they needed me to do, and they gave me a suggestion, and I did it, and I still do it. But, you know, after all those years, it's, you know, it was like 17, 18 years in sobriety that I did that. More shall be revealed. Let's see. You know, I really like that 10, 11, and 12. If I'm living in 10, 11, and 12, my life's flowing. And it really is, when I don't, is when my life is a mess. You know, I am, like I said, about 3 years ago, my mom died. And I was not close to my mom growing up. In fact, she was like the enemy. Because she loved me so much, she wanted me everything that she wasn't, is what it was. And, about 3 years before she died, I got really close with her. You know, I made another amends to her. I accepted her exactly how she was. I just finally got it, that she wasn't going to change that who she was. And I saw what a beautiful person she really was. I saw what my friends saw in her. And I was there when she died the whole time. I never left that hospital for almost a week. And talk about this program, the fellowship. I had people calling me, writing us, texting me, you know, bringing me food, all sorts of things, sending me cards. Like, how did you know about this? And, you know, but I was able to, I heard a lady in the program, actually she was the very first sponsor I had. When her mother was dying, she crawled up in bed with her. And I did that with my grandmother too, who I was very close to at the time. And I did that with my mom. And the doctor is like, it's after we made the decision that we weren't going to do anything else, that we took her off everything, the doctor's just like, I mean, I shocked him. He's like looking at me, and my brother goes, oh, that's what she does. And, you know, what am I going to do, hurt her? You know, and it was, to me, it was just a very beautiful moment. My aunt, her sister, just thought it was very touching and stuff. Some people might think it's gross. I don't know, but I felt really close to my mom. And, you know, it's, I miss my mom, but I'm so glad that she's not here anymore and suffering. She was so sick. All my life, she was ill. I never knew my mom not to be sick. And I know I have an angel up there, and sometimes I still get that, you know, oh, am I going to disappoint her? Probably. But I went through, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I went through a couple of years where it was really tough. When she died, my dad started drinking heavily again, and my brother getting a divorce, and he was drinking, and my other brother, I don't know what he did. But they told me that I was in charge, that, you know, I had to do everything. And that's how I am. I'm kind of the person, when you know, something's right then, I can handle it. That's what I call a bar. And so I'm doing all the arrangements, everything, and, you know, of course, I did something wrong, and I had it, and I blew up at my brother, and he blew up at me. And for the first time, my husband, who doesn't get involved in anything, told my brother off. And I was like, shock me. Because you're not going to talk to her like that. I'm like, whoa. You know, and that, you know, I was strong. Everybody said, oh, you're so strong. You're the strongest person I know, blah, 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 blah. And when it was all over, I wasn't, you know. And they got to drink. Is what it was. They got to drink, and I just wanted to be a rebel. I don't know. I just wanted to be bad. I don't know. You know, I felt like I was always so good, and I was still doing good. I just wanted to be girl. And so, you know, I kind of moved. I didn't move away intentionally from the program. I guess I did. But my connection with my higher power suffered. I still believed in God. I was still praying, but I didn't feel like I meant it. I was doing things that, you know, I wasn't proud of, that no one probably be proud of, and things that were just, you know, just weren't good for me, weren't good for my program. And it was, what was the hardest part wasn't that part. The hardest part was forgiving myself. You know, I'm not perfect. I get that. You know, no one's perfect in here, but, you know, yes, I do. I have to be perfect, because you have to know that I am all perfect. And it was really, really tough. And, you know, I've had some really dark moments in the last couple of years, really dark, and where, you know, it's not that I wanted to drink, but I just didn't want to feel anymore. I just wanted to check out. And it's a really scary place. And finally, you know, I let someone know what was going on, you know, really, you know, in depth what was going on, not just the, oh, I feel like crap, you know, I did this, blah. And I took suggestions, and, you know, I'm doing 10, 11, 12 again. So I went back through my steps, and I'm finding that, I don't want to say the old Rayanne, but I'm finding that joy again, that peace, that love that I have. When I look at someone, I don't think, ooh, gross. You know, I find the good in them. My brother, you know, used to brag to his friends wherever we meet somewhere. He says, yeah, my sister can find the good in anyone. And, you know, I wasn't. I was seeing things like before I got sober. It was everybody else's fault but mine. But, you know, I created my own mess. You know, today's been a good day. I didn't drink. You know, and that's all it is. It's one day at a time. And the hardest person for me to forgive is myself. It always has been. You know, because I still want to measure up. I still want you to think whatever about me, that, you know, I'm perfect. And that was one thing my first sponsor told me. It really made me mad. She told me, you know, you have to love everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to like them, because guess what? They're not going to all like you. And that about killed me. How could you not like me? Because all than anything, you know, to make you like me. But, you know, I'm getting back to where if you don't like me, that's your problem, not mine. You know, talk to your sponsor about it. You know, you know, my work's going really good. Things that were bugging me aren't. Things are just going good because I'm working the program again. You're not even working. I'm living it. There's a difference. You know, I get to do things today. You know, I heard that word. I always say, oh, I have to do this, or I need to do this. It was out of my vocabulary, and I get to do things today. I get to go to a job that I love. I get to teach kids to sneeze on me and, you know, cry and, you know, sometimes I have to change the name. You know, I get to do these things. You know, I have two really, really good kids. And my first sponsor told me really early on, she said, these kids are not yours, they're God's. He's letting you borrow them. And you know, that really helped because it put it in a completely different, you know, perspective. Like, oh, I don't want to, you know, mess up. Yeah. And I did plenty of messing up. My daughter and I had a really, our relationship was pretty tough for, you know, when she was in high school, let's see, about 12 to about 18. And we just butt had nothing like my mom and I. She has never told me she hated me. She rolled her eyes at me quite a few times. Or turned, yeah. She never dropped me off anywhere. She told me to get out of the car. She may have not talked to me. You know, today we get along really good. She calls me and asks me my advice. You know, what do you think I should do? She may not take it, but, you know, I'm still that mom who wants to, you know, help. But, you know, I try to wait for her to ask me and not put judgment on her or say anything. My son, I've always gotten along with him. He's great. He's graduating next year. In fact, the last time I was here was in 08. We should have just put that on and I could go. He was just, you know, taking off for college and he's graduating next December. And my daughter's graduating in a year from May. And they're great people. And it wasn't me. It was because of you guys. You showed me how to raise my kids. And, you know, my higher power. Yeah, David had part of it on different parts. Actually, he played a big part. Because when I first got sober, I went to a lot of meetings. I wasn't home like when I was drinking. At least I wasn't drinking, I told him. You know, he raised those kids, and there came a time when I wanted to be around those kids. So I quit going to so many meetings. And, you know, I started, two meetings in Corcoran. There was already one. I started two more. And I was going more in Corcoran and maybe once or twice a week in Visalia. Because I wanted, it was so important for me to raise those kids. Because I saw him, how they were going to him when they were 4 and 5 years old. And I wanted them to be with me, too. And I took those 7, 8 years, and it was the best thing I ever did. My kids never went to any band performance, recital, horse show, without one of us there. We were always there, one of us. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. And you guys taught me that, you know. So if you're new and you didn't like anything I said, just keep coming back. You'll hear someone better another day. I really don't have, you know, that great of a story, but, you know, I love this program. I truly do. And I want to close with, I've been reading and listening to something about miracles. And a lot of people say, oh, he's a miracle. Look at him. And, you know, I still have a problem. I believe Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle. I don't think I'm a miracle. I'm a part of that miracle. Because if I say I'm a miracle, then I'm putting myself too big. And if I say I'm a part of it, I'm right size. I'm the same size and equal. And that's what happens when I come in here. I'm the same as you. I'm not better. I'm not worse. And that's what, you know, that's what I've always wanted. Thank you.